This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. I am a dental division director at the CPA firm of Ide Bailey, located in Southern California. And as I've told you guys, we are in our seventh year of doing this podcast. Pretty crazy. And we are actually doing a two-part series on designing and constructing a dental office. And I am really fortunate to have two brothers that are helping me out in providing you all this information. In our last podcast, we had Joe Panisi, who is a dental architect, and we talked to him about dental design, interior design, all this kind of stuff. And we're going to integrate that with a conversation today with his brother, Mike Panisi. Mike has been doing this work for 18 years. He and his team have built over 250 dental offices. He's the managing partner at the Renovo Group out of Roseville, California, Northern California. They work all over California and in Northern Nevada. And we're going to talk about everything you want to know about building a dental office. But if you're not building a dental office, don't turn this podcast off, please. Okay, because we're going to talk about remodels, expansions, things you should do to kind of upgrade your office. So we'll get to Mike in a minute. He is one of the most knowledgeable dental contractors I have ever met, and that's why he gets to come on my podcast. So we'll get to Mike in a moment. First, I want to thank my wonderful marketing partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com, 140 continuing education courses, clinical continuing education courses, the best in the business at a very, very reasonable price. And in addition, the best clinical content in their magazine. If you don't subscribe to their magazine or you're not looking online at what they're doing, you're really missing some really top clinicians from all over the world. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. Again, we're recording here in the summer in the middle of July, getting hot. I'm assuming it's getting hot where you are. It's hot where I am. And, you know, this is where we're doing mid-year planning for our clients. And if you got a big surprise from your CPA on April 13th and he or she called you and said, well, gee, sorry, you owe $70,000 and you got to come up with it 2 days, we're here for you. We specialize in dentistry. That's all we do day in and day out. Don Watson, Henry Assatorian, Scott Haberman, and I, we do this work for hundreds and hundreds of dental practices. If you need some help or you just have a question and you're not sure, we'll be happy to spend some time with you. 657-279-3243, awiederman@idebailey.com. Be sure to watch for our Business of Dentistry series. We're doing it with many local dental societies here in Southern California on September 17th and November 12th. On November, clinical issues on as well as we've got some great content regarding wellness. And in November, we're going to help you with the tax bill. We did a webinar on September 4th, which if you need to get a copy of it, it's recorded. on President Trump's big, beautiful bill, which does some really good things for dentists. So we're here for you, dental community, and that's why we do this podcast. It's a labor of love for me. And again, if you need us for anything, 657-279-3243 or awiederman@idebailey.com.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
So let's go to my guest. So I've known Mike Panisi for a while. He's just one of the really good guys, easy to talk to, speaks English. I mean, I've talked to other people in his business who they just start getting real graphic and technical. And if you ask my friends and family, changing a light bulb is about as far as my technical abilities go in this life. So having guys like Mike on my team to help my clients is really wonderful. As I mentioned, he's been doing this for 18 years, 250 dental offices. He's the managing partner of the Renovo Group out of Roseville, California. Mike Panisi, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast.
Thanks, Art. Nice to see you.
So, as I mentioned at the beginning, you work with your brother, Joe.
I do.
So, how early when you guys were growing up did you guys kind of know that you were going to maybe go into this field? How did that evolve?
You know, it's funny. Our father was a general dentist for approximately 40 years. He worked on the East Coast. And then before I was born, moved out here to Pleasanton, California, which is in the Northern California area, San Francisco Bay Area. He operated his office there for about another 30 years or so. And as we all got older and started getting into college and figuring out what we wanted to do, he was, you know, dying for one of us to take over the practice. And we all said, no, we're not going to do that. So Joe was first, you know, he's the oldest. He went to college, he became an architect, and our middle brother did something different than dental. And when I got to college, I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. I was a business major and never actually imagined I would leave there starting a construction company. It wasn't on my radar at all. But I also knew I wasn't going to be a dentist. So, you know, we tried to, help my parents out. My dad ended up selling the practice. And, you know, all these years later, here we both are designing and building offices together. It's kind of come full fold for us.
I would think it's got to be kind of fun working with your brother hand in hand. And we're going to talk about that. But you went to San Luis Obispo, and did you go into construction right out of college, or tell me a little bit about your professional journey.
No, actually, I went into tech. I was in sales for a bit. And then one thing led to another. My company closed down and my wife and I had just gotten married and bought a house and, you know, no kids. And here I am with a mortgage and was laid off. And the builder approached me and said, hey, I noticed you're at home quite a bit. We're looking for people. And so I said, sure, I'll go work for you for a bit. Ended up being at that builder for 9 years. They're a large residential home builder throughout the nation. And worked my way from kind of a field, you know, assistant to a regional director with them and ran all of their Northern California operations. And, it, you know, 08 hit, we kind of saw the writing on the wall. That kind of started in that industry. It started at the end of 06, early 07. We started seeing some shaky things happening. So I quickly went out and got my contractor's license just to kind of be ready in case something happened. And, you know, 12 rounds of layoffs later, I volunteered to leave and said, I can't deal with this anymore. And so I went and started my company, Renovo Group, with my business partner.
And how did you decide to get into dental? Because you said you had done residential.
Yeah, correct. So we decided as a team that we were going to tackle commercial and not get back into residential. So we were building, you know, restaurants and buildings and hair salons. And my brother Joe was with Patterson Dental for almost 30 years, off and on. He worked for a few other equipment suppliers, but always kept his architectural license. And well, we went into commercial. He said, man, you should, at that point, he was an equipment sales specialist with Patterson, and said, you should start building dental offices, you know, come look at a couple of these. And I went and visited him out on a couple job sites and said, man, this looks like it's a no brainer. We could do this. So, you know, once we got our first dental office, we learned a lot. And here we are, you know, almost 250 dental offices later. I consider us one of the leading experts in the industry.
Oh, I that's why you're on my podcast, my friend. That's why you are here. So let's start. We talked about your brother, Joe. And again, there's not a commercial for you and your brother, but let's talk about the architect working with the contractor. So we have the conversation in the last podcast with your brother. There might be a little bit of redundancy here, but I want to get it from the contractor's view. Okay. You get hired. You get a set of plans. How do you, and again, I know that not every job you do is with your brother. You work with other architects.
Yep.
How do you work with the architects? And, you know, what happens if you're not, do you need to be involved in the process of the architectural designs as the contractor? Do you just wait till the architect is, how does that work?
Well, there's two ways to go about it. And as you mentioned, we're not the same company, Joe and I. We work independently. He works on other dental offices without me. I work on other dental offices without him. So the two ways to go about it is that, you know, either a client is going to go out and hire their own architect, get the plans ready. My advice, if you do that, is to get that to a point that you're ready to submit for permitting. And if you plan on bidding this out to, you know, two or three different general contractors, that's a great time to send the plans out. Once they're ready to be submitted for permitting, everything's on paper. All the details have been fleshed out and we're comparing apples to apples. I've seen that process go a little bit awry where a doctor might send out a preliminary set of plans and not all the information's there. And so me as a contractor bidding on this, I'm now making some sort of an assumption on lighting, for instance, or plumbing fixtures or flooring because it's not spelled out, which is fine. We do that all the time. I do a lot of jobs. I start a lot of jobs not knowing what those details are, but we put an allowance in. But that's a gray area. And maybe contractor B may assume something different. Now, all of a sudden, our bids are different. And they say, wow, he's really cheap. And I say, yeah, but what type of floor did he have? What did he have for his lighting package in there? So it can get a little bit convoluted if you don't have those details. So option A is that you're going to, and then these are in no particular order. Option A is that you hire your own architect, you get those plans. If you're planning to bid it to separate contractors, my advice is that you get those permit ready. Architect has the mechanical, electrical, plumbing plans done and stamped by the engineer and ready to submit to the city. Option B, which I actually prefer, is something we call design build. You go to your contractor and, you know, we'll get into this later about the team that's going to surround you as you're trying to design this office and move forward on an office. There's a lot of moving parts and everybody has their own expertise, your realtor, your equipment supplier, and we'll talk more about that later. But option B is that you go and hire a contractor and say, I want you to do the architectural design, all the mechanical, electric, and plumbing plans, submit for permits, and then build the office. And what does that look like? So we need to have a certain amount of information, obviously, to give the doctor a price. Otherwise, I'm grasping at straws and say, I don't have any floor plan. I don't know how many operatories you want to build. I know you have a 2,000 square foot space that you're moving into. And we can back into that maybe with some rough budgetary numbers. The best thing we could do at that point is get some sort of a fit plan, whether we create it. And a lot of times the equipment supplier will create that. And so what is a fit plan? A fit plan is going in and measuring the space and actually putting on paper, you can fit five operatories in this space with this size sterile, with, you know, two bathrooms, with a private office, with a console, whatever the case is. At least that's something that tangible that I can then take to my subcontractors and start taking measurements on and putting real budgets together. It's not just saying, you know, estimated $220 a square foot times your square footage. It's, this is the price. And I know we don't have flooring picked out, so I used X amount of dollars per square foot as the finished floors. I know we don't have lighting, so I put X amount of dollars in as a lighting budget. It's all very clearly spelled out. And I included the architecture and the mechanical, electrical, plumbing design work. It's all wrapped up into one package. Here's the final price. And we get under contract. And then I typically engage my brother as the designer on that. And he'll engage with the doctor and then start designing the office. So two ways to go about it.
Two questions off of that. Number one, it sounds to me like it's important that when the doctor is looking for a space before he or she signs a lease, that you at least be able to say, because if the doctor has a vision, I want six operatories, and they go rent, they want to be in that building, but the only space they can get is 1,700 square feet. Well, we know, Brent, six operatories in 1,700 square feet is probably not going to happen unless you want operatories that are like 3 feet by 3 feet, right? So it's kind of important that you at least are involved in talking to the doctor before they even pick the space, because if they want six operatories, you're going to tell them, hey, I need this number of square feet, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I was alluding to about getting to that process, because this process starts long before the design and construction. I tell people this all the time. You don't need to hire someone that only deals with dental, but you sure as heck better be hiring someone that has dealt with dental. We don't just do dental. I do urgent care facilities, surgical offices, hair salons. I've built probably 50 hair salons in the last 18 years. We've done, maybe 15 restaurants. We've done veterinary clinics, ground up mixed use buildings that have apartments, but we've also done 250 dental offices. So we are experts in dental. My advice is that you start with a bank. I would say probably a larger bank. Some of the larger banks, like Bank of America, for instance, they have practice lending groups. They'll help you guide you through this process. They'll say, my advice is you start with, how much can I afford? Let me get with the bank. Let me get some, get them my financials. Let me see what I actually get approved for. And what are we looking at dollar wise? A lot of the larger banks have that program with the practice lending group, and they already have a dollar amount. They say, you're a associate, for instance, you've been working, here's your financials. We're going to approve you for an automatic amount of money. It's a program that they have set up. From there, they're going to give you referrals to realtors that specialize in dental. Again, maybe they don't only do dental, but at least they know dental well enough that they're going to start saying, what do you do, doctor? What do you practice? How big do you want your practice to be? And they're going to start honing in on what that sweet spot of square footage is. If you tell them you want five operatories, you can't go look for 1,000 square feet of space. It's never going to fit.
Right.
So that you have to get, my advice is you get a realtor that actually knows something about what you do and what you practice, and that they can start looking for the right space for you. And my opinion, that all starts with the bank. Go to the bank. Talk to your equipment sales reps as well. They can give you referrals to great bankers in your local area that will deal with this. But my experience has been with the larger banks, they have groups that are set up to handle dental, and they'll help guide you through. They'll give you a referral to a realtor. The realtor then will start looking for spaces. They're going to communicate with the realtor and say, hey, this is what they're approved for, which means the build out cost is going to be X, which means this is about our square footage parameter, because you don't forget, you also have to buy equipment to equip the office, and you need to buy cabinetry. So there's different parts of this that all go together, and the larger banking institutions, they know the formula. They have spreadsheets to deal with all that. So
you talk about the banks, and I know I've done work with Bank of America for close to 40 years. And in most of the large metropolitan, just to use them as an example, in most of the large metropolitan areas, Mike, they have one specialist who works on practice acquisition. So if you want to buy a practice, you go to person A. And in that area, the other person is someone who does the startups, the remodels, the second offices, the expansions, purchases of real estate. I mean, we're going to get into real estate in a minute. One more thing I want to talk about on the bid process. I mean, obviously, the doctors, you want to spend as little money as you can. That's a good business decision. But how do you assess the bids, Mike? And again, let's put the fact that, you're going to get jobs, and that you bid jobs and you've gotten many of them, and some you haven't gotten. But what advice to our listeners about assessing three bids? What should they be looking for in the bid to make the right decision?
So that kind of goes back to that whole start of the process, you know, long before design, long before the contractor, you're talking to your bank, you're going to get your lending approval. They're going to use you to a realtor there. I also suggest you engage your equipment sales specialist, whether that's, you know, with the large company or whatever, you know, there are several that I work with everybody. First of all, we work with every bank, we work with every architect, but there are several that I know that are very good at what they do and they know the ins and outs of it. So what does that mean? That means as you're going through this process, they've been through it many times. They know what the averages are in your area to build a dental office. There's no magic to it. It's not like, you know, we throw numbers out and say, oh, because I can charge this, that's what I'm charging. It's strictly my cost plus a fair markup plus our overhead. That's where we get out, you know, this is what the cost is. And there become averages of, you know, dollars per square foot for that type of office for the past, you know, 6 to 8 months. This has been about the average dollar per square foot to build that type of office at that size space. The banks know that, the equipment specialists know that, the realtors know that. They know what is being done in your specific geographical area. So I suggest that, you know, you stick with that team that is being referred to you because they're the experts. They know us. They've done this many times. And so getting to your question about my bid and how do you assess that, they're going to help you do that. The bank's going to look at those with you, or your realtor's going to maybe give you some advice and say, hey, you know, yeah, they all look good. Oh, that guy's missing X, Y, and Z. I've worked with that contractor. You might want to take a second look at him and maybe, you know, maybe not use them. Yeah. They're going to give you advice on what their experience has been. You know, I'm the first guy to say when someone asks me about a great competitor of ours, hey, have you heard of this company? I go, yeah, he's a great guy. They do great work. I've never heard complaints. I compete against them all the time. And you're not going to go wrong with that company, even though they're my competitor, because, you know, we're fair guys. They're fair guys. I guess what I'm trying to stress is that there are dental experts that we kind of build teams locally in geographical areas that get referred to, and they all know what they're doing. So my advice is rely on that team, rely on the banker, rely on the realtor, rely on your equipment specialist to help select a contractor that they've worked with that they can vouch for.
Okay, so now a dentist says they're going to hire you. They like you. They engage you. What? Give us a 35,000 foot view of kind of what are the questions you're asking that dentist when you get started?
Well, so is it getting started building? Are you referring to, or starting?
Yeah, I mean, because by the time they get to you, they've got plans pretty much, right?
No, actually, and that's why I asked the question. Sometimes I get a call. So I'll give you two different scenarios.
Yeah, please do.
So you know, the call I might get is, hey, Mike, I've been working with X, Y, and Z architecture. I have a space. This is how big it is. This is where it's at. I'm under lease. And I have a set of plans that are ready to be permitted. So we talked about that earlier. Would you be interested in talking about this project further? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. Send me over the plans. We'll get our bid process started. That process might take, you know, anywhere from a week and a half to 2 weeks to get a full fixed bid prepared, ready, and sent back to the doctor that we could then sign a contract with and get started on work once the permit's issued. That's one scenario. The other scenario, which happens quite often, is I get introduced during that upfront process of trying to either find the location or, hey, we found the location, can you come look at it? Or I just signed a lease on this location and I don't have plans yet. What's the next step? So there's a lot of different scenarios. And what I might walk you through is the largest case scenario would be, I just got approved by the bank for this amount of dollar. I'm now working with this realtor who's an expert in dentistry, and can you help us? And so a lot of times I know the realtor, like I said, you know, 18 years in the industry, I know most of the realtors that are out there.
It's a small world that you and I live in.
It's a small world, is right. You always run into someone you know. And so I will actually go out and assess, you know, two or three locations. Doctor is not under lease yet. They've engaged a realtor. A realtor lines up and says, hey, I have these three options. Doctor might go out and say, I like two of the three. Okay, let's get Mike in there now. And I can give them an assessment from a constructability standpoint. I like A because of X, Y, and Z, and I don't like it because it's missing whatever. I like B because of X, Y, and Z, but B, I'm worried about not having enough power to run the dental equipment. It's a crucial component to get us in or somebody in, a contractor, to look at the upfront, the space before it's under lease.
Yes.
Or purchase.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the ideal scenario, right?
That's the ideal scenario. The two biggest problems I run into for a doctor are parking, right? Having the right number of parking spaces, which has actually become less of a problem the past year. California passed a bill that now allows us to overrule that if we're within so many miles of a mass transit hub. So that's become huge for us. That kind of got us over that hurdle. The other problem I usually find is power. We don't have enough power to run the pano and all the x-ray units and the computers and their sterilization equipment. That is a problem more often than you would actually think.
That's an issue with the building, Mike?
Yeah, correct. There's not enough power allocated to that space that they're looking at.
So to me, a dentist would be crazy to sign a lease until you look at the building.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's what we need to tell our people. All right, let's get in. I got so much I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You're going to sign a contract with the dentist. Okay. There's all kinds of things in this contract. Now, we're not going to make you a lawyer here or anything like that.
Sure.
But I know that you talk about, you know, the cost and change orders and permits and the time to complete. What are some of the things in the contract that the dentist needs to understand that his relationship with you, that he's going to be dealing with? Just some three or four main things, maybe.
So if it's a job where a project where the plans were done prior to bidding it. So you know, that scenario A, you went and got your own architect, you have plans, you're submitting them for permits, and now you're getting bids, and then you go under contract. That contract should adhere to those plans, right? The architect's going to call out type A light fixture is a Lithonia, whatever, and that better be in your bid, right? I have these types of doors, or, you know, there's 15 doors and seven of them have glass inserts and it's frosted or there's film on it or whatever. That better be included in your bid, and it should state that in the scope of work. A lot of times I'll draft our contracts and say, you know, there's all the boilerplate information like you mentioned, and I'll get into the change orders and all that stuff. But I'll actually insert the scope of work that was proposed as an addendum in the contract. So our scope of work is baked into the contract that you're getting the X, Y, and Z. And that's where I've seen some pitfalls with, I've had actually, believe it or not, doctors come back to me 10 years later and say, hey, I didn't use you on the first go around because I didn't think you were experienced enough. You'd only been doing this for 3 years. And now 10 years later, I'm 13 years into it. And they said, I should have used you because that guy really didn't do what he said he was going to do. He didn't give me the right doors. He didn't give me the right ceiling. He didn't, you know, right lighting. You know, I should have used you the first time, and I'll actually build out their second office for them 10 years later. So
yeah.
I've had that scenario happen before. So, you know, make sure you're getting what you're supposed to be getting. Now the alternative, option B, right? We're doing a design build. We don't know what any of that stuff is yet because the office hasn't been designed. So what do you do there? Well, I will put allowances in and say, here's what the allowance is per dollar per square foot for flooring, for tile. Here's what the dollar per square foot is for, you know, whatever. Here's your total budget for lighting. And then we work with the architect during the design process to stay within those parameters. I find more often than not, the design build approach, whether it's with me or with some other, you know, GC that has their architect they work with, I feel like costs are controlled better that way. And so when you sign the contract, I've already vetted all that during the design process with the architect and can say, yeah, that light package will be on budget per our contract, unless you make a change. Right. The doctor may come and say, and I've had this happen a lot of times. They say, I fell in love with this tile. My wife fell in love with this tile when we were looking last weekend. Hey, that's, you know, $5 a square foot more than what we have budgeted for. You know, you tell me, do you want to use that or not? This is how much total it's going to cost extra. And then the doctor can make that decision. So, you know, what are you looking for? Is, are you getting what you're supposed to be getting? Number one, first and foremost, when you talk about change orders, most of the time, unless something's unforeseen, and I'll get back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
You know, you open a wall and something's missing or broken or damaged. You should be on budget unless you change something in one of those parameters. Option scenario A, architect called out gold plated flooring, and now all of a sudden you're making it platinum. Well, there should be a change order for that, right? Because now you're upgrading your flooring for the plan. Option B, we did the design build, and I included $3.50 a square foot for LVT, and you pick something that's $7. Well, there's going to be a change order for that because now you've upgraded your material again. So how do you handle that? Well, we type up the price, you know, what the cost difference is, call the change order.
Yeah, propose it.
Propose it. And no work should be done or material ordered until you've signed off and approved that. That's the way that works.
And the thing, doctors, a couple things I want you to understand. Number one, because I've helped a lot of doctors in the process on the numbers in building dental offices, is number one, everybody who is in business must and deserves to make a fair profit. Okay. And the people, the goodniks in the industry, that's a technical term, Mike, goodniks.
I like it.
You're one of those guys, is you're going to make a fair profit. So if you do a change order, there's profit involved in that if you're on a percentage. Correct. I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it works. And if you, I have learned, doctors, that when I, like right now, I told Mike 2 days ago, we started construction on a remodel of our home. And I told the contractor, I said, you've given me a fair price. You're going to get a fair profit. I want you to have a fair profit. We're going to be fair about this. You're going to be a lot happier working for that customer who's working together with you, as opposed to somebody who's going to try and grind you for every nickel, right?
That's right. That's
okay. Right. I mean, it's that simple. All right, listen, I got a bunch of other stuff. Working with dental-specific professionals, I'm assuming you've gotten plans from people that have never looked at a dental office before, right?
That's
okay. How does that work? What do you find that the problems are?
Typically, it comes down, what I've seen with those issues is that there's it's a workflow situation, right? They may not design the office so that the sterile is in a great location and that it functions and flows properly for how the doctor's going to operate in the office. It goes further if they have a lab and they're doing, you know, lab work in the office. I usually see that issue with a workflow problem. Now, there's varying degrees of not being a dental expert as an architect, right? I've had doctors that hire a residential architect because it's their brother-in-law's best friend, and the guy designs the office, and he doesn't do commercial. That's a whole nother level. I've dealt through that. Like, hey, dude, this is not ADA compliant. This is not ADA compliant. This is basic commercial stuff that needs to happen, irregardless if it's a dental office or not, and you don't have it designed properly. You can't submit this to the city. Or at even worst case scenario, I've seen where it gets approved by the city and we say, there's no way the inspector is going to sign off on this. I know better than that. And then we have to go back and that's a mess to untangle.
And you might even consider turning that job down, Mike, because you see a quagmire and it's going to take you a lot more time.
At this point in my career, I 100% would probably turn that down. Or in the early days, I took those jobs on and they were an absolute nightmare to deal with.
I get it. All right. I want to take a second. I want you to talk a little bit about what you do at the Renovo Group. And I want to have you give out your contact information. Doctors, as you know, who are longtime listeners to my podcast, I only have the best people on here. I get nothing from Mike. I'll get nothing from his brother, Joe, other than the satisfaction to know that you're getting great information. And so would you do me a favor and just talk a little bit about what you do and give out your contact information? Make sure that's in the show notes.
Sure. Absolutely. So, we are a full service, general contracting firm. As I mentioned a few times, you know, I deal with all commercial for Renovo Group. So, whether that's dental offices, oral surgery offices, like I said, urgent care, medical, ground up construction, you know, restaurants, whatever. I deal with all of the commercial construction for Renovo Group. We also do extremely high end luxury homes in the Northern California, Tahoe area. A lot of these homes are selling between $15 and $60 million. So, my business partner deals with that. I obviously help, and you know, I give him my 2 cents, and he gives my 2 cents on, you know, his 2 cents on commercial. We are, that's how we're great together. We can bounce a lot of ideas off of each other. But I'm not as involved with the residential. He's not as involved with the commercial. But I'll, you know, with our 20 some odd field representatives that we have on staff, a lot of them are dealing with these $15 and $60 million homes up in Tahoe, and I'll pull them down to my jobs in the, you know, in commercial, and have them installing our doors or wood trim, or so I'm getting, we kind of get the best of both worlds. We're getting a very high quality labor pool that is a part of our own staff to work on some of these dental offices, which works out fantastic for us. So, yeah, there's two facets of the company. That's our two main focuses at this point.
Okay. Give out what, how can people get a hold of you if they want to just ask you a question? Maybe they want to work with you. Maybe they just, they're in the middle of it and they don't know what to do. What, how, what's a phone number, email?
Both, either way. I'm on my phone constantly, as everybody is these days. My number is 925-858-6011. My email address is mike@renovogroup.com, and it's RINNOVO group.com. It's also our website. You can go on our website and see some examples of some of our past work. And I actually direct a lot of clients to the website once we're under contract and say, hey, start looking at my website. There's a lot of ideas on there and pictures. And, you know, I'll have doctors come back and say, hey, what did you do for this floor, or what paint color is that? I really like that a lot. And then we can go back in our records and look things up and say, oh, great, we did that for Dr. So-and-so, and here it is right here. And we'll just order that up for you and get going. So it's a great way to kind of like the Pinterest board that, you know, you get from a lot of doctors. Our website's a great way to start looking at things like that.
I got a bunch of other stuff and not enough time to talk to you about it, so let's hit a bunch of things. What kind of challenges do you get presented with in dealing with the landlords, and what should the doctors know about that?
Well, it kind of goes back to that important, point of having a contractor come in early in the process before you sign a lease. We've gotten into that situation where there's a lease signed and all of a sudden we go out there and say, hey, I'll use power as an example again. Hey, there's not enough power coming to this, suite. Hopefully your realtor signed it saying, well, this is what we need, you know, kind of in the industry. Anything below 3,000 square feet, our general rule of thumb is you need 200 amps of three-phase power going to that suite. That's just off the cuff. Will less work? Maybe. We might be able to look at, you know, a 1,600 square foot office and say, doctor, what are you renting? You know, I have a pano and I'm using all, you know, Nomad type x-ray units. Nothing's hardwired. I have a couple computers. We might be able to make that work. We most likely will make that work for less than 200 amps, but kind of across the board, that's kind of the boilerplate. When I talk to realtors, I say, hey, throw it in the lease that they're to get 200 amps to that suite. That usually covers us for, you know, up to about a 3,000 square foot office. Getting beyond that, you may need more. So then we're starting to calculate. I've had that happen too, where a doctor's looking at 4,500 square feet. I just finished a 5,700 square foot multidiscipline practice in Livermore, California. And going into that, there was a lot of upfront work that we went through. You know, what, you know, let's work with your equipment supplier. Give me a list of all the equipment that we're looking at. Let my then take that to my electrician and let him start calculating things and saying, this is what we need minimum to run this office. It was a lot more than 200. We actually needed two 200 amp panels, so 400 amps total going to that suite, which is a lot when you're talking about an older building and trying to allocate it out of all the other stuff that's going on in that building, all the other offices and dental offices or hair salon or whatever it is, and take that much power and just direct and say, this is what's going to this suite and no one else can use it. That becomes sometimes becomes an issue. So that, you know, what are some of the pitfalls is that you sign the lease, none of that information's in there. We get in there and then say, hey, you only have 100 amps and you need 150 or you need 200. let's, you know, now we need to bring it in. Who's paying for that? That's a pitfall that I typically see. And I hate to keep harping on power, but that's probably becomes our biggest issue. Most buildings have plumbing. Most buildings have a sewer line already. You know, there's a bathroom or a sink, which is a no-brainer. The air conditioning's there, or no one would have been using it, right? You have heating and cooling. Electricity and having ample power becomes our biggest issue when assessing buildings these days.
ADA compliance. Get into that conversation. Yes.
You know, and that's going back. That's why I like working with the realtors I work with. They know the drill. So they're going to ask for the right amount of power. They're also going to say that the landlord, and it's a loaded question, right? If they're buying their own building, then now you're the landlord. So a landlord is responsible to make sure that the ADA upgrades are sufficient for permitting. You know, I can quickly look at a space and say, this is 100% out of compliance. So you're going to have to do major work in the parking lot. You need handrails. There's no ramp. There's no elevator. You know, second floors, a lot of times, dental, you have to have some way to get to the second floor ADA. If you were a CFA firm, like you're working at, a lot of times you don't need an elevator to get to the second floor because you're saying, well, I have employees and, you know, whatever, but you have the general public coming into your office for treatment, they're going to make you be 100% compliant on a new office build out. So, you know, that means that eliminates a lot of second floors for us as well. So ADA compliancy, there's a lot of different things that go into it. You know, how large is the restroom? Is the toilet far enough away from the door? Do we have a turning radius for a wheelchair between the sink and the toilet and the door? There's all these different things that go into that. But going back to assessing a building, we're going to be looking at parking lot. You know, where is your suite located? Is there a way to get there from the ground floor if it's in the second floor? There's things like that you have to look at. If you're the building owner, you're now on the hook to deal with all of that as you are progressing through your construction documents and permitting and things like that. You don't have to do the work then, but you're going to have to design it, you know, showing that you're within compliance, and then it's got to be brought up to code. So, you know, if you're leasing there, again, you put it in your lease that the landlord is responsible for all of that. If you're buying it, then you need to be a little more particular upfront and do your due diligence. So you maybe work a deal with the existing owner to get some kind of credit back to make the upgrades.
So let's talk about subcontractors. Now, I know that nobody in all the 250 offices you've ever built, nobody has ever said to you, well, you know, my brother-in-law is a plumbing contractor and I really want to use him. I know he hasn't built any plumbing for dental offices, but he's really good. Talk about the subs. I'm assuming the subs you work with have worked with you for a long time. They've done dental. Talk about using subs and what our doctors should know about using subs.
Okay. Yeah. So yes, you're correct. My subs, some of them have been here for 3 years. Some have been here for 12, you know, they've all done tons of offices. You really want to have, it kind of goes back to that GC question I said earlier, you know, that they have the experience of working in dental, but not, they don't necessarily need to just be doing dental. You know, even if they say I've done three offices, well, they know then that what is going to be required to bring, you know, electricity to your chairs, or if you have sinks at every operatory, what they're going to need to do. Air and vacuum obviously goes to every single operatory. What are we doing at the head wall? Are we doing it at the foot of the chair? Are we doing it at both? If it's a chair delivery and you want to have the option at the head wall, are we doing nitrous and oxygen? Is that plumbed? There's a lot of questions that go into that. So, you know, getting back to the brother-in-law question, plumber is probably not so terrible because plumbing becomes plumbing. Electrical, I feel like that's maybe more of a specific thing because some of the machinery needs very specific amperages and voltage that goes to it, or else it's not going to work properly. It kind of depends on what subcontractor you're talking about. Flooring wise, you know, probably a no-brainer. It's commercial flooring. It's not a big deal if the brother-in-law is a commercial subcontractor for flooring. That I would stress more the material than what if they know how to install it properly. But, you know, you're also taking the liability, right, for that trade. So I'm going to say, great, use your brother-in-law, but I'm not going to warranty his work and I'm not going to pay him directly and I'm not going to vouch for him or anything like that. So you're kind of on your own for that
type
that's
of
a discussion that has to happen up front. Hey,
absolutely.
Want to use my brother-in-law for the float, whatever. All right. Anyhow, I guess, yeah, I got a bunch of other things I want to hit with you. Let's talk about, you know, a lot of times you go into a professional building, it's a shell, you build it. What about building, you know, let's compare the building of a new office to a remodel or an expansion. A doctor, a doctor's taking over the suite next door, or a doctor's got a bunch of extra space and he wants to get a plumber. How do you approach that? Because we have a lot of our clients that want to do that. They're growing. They're doing really well. They need an extra two or three operatories, or they want to maybe even build out a whole suite next door.
Right. Absolutely. Great question. My advice there is, if you're going to buy a practice and you think you want to remodel it and you have the cash to do it now before you start operating there. Because I have multiple clients that have said, I'm going to do this down 2 years down the road. And 2 years comes and they say, man, I just can't shut the office down now for 3 or 4 weeks to do this major remodel. I should have done this earlier. So be cognizant of that. You know, getting back to that ADA question, you know, I was talking about full compliancy because of dollar value. It's all dollar value in California. If you're over, I believe that the current threshold is about 162,000, that triggers full compliancy. If you're going to buy an office or you own an office and you want to do a light remodel, new cabinetry, some new sinks, flooring, paint, things like that, you're not going to trigger a whole slew of ADA. California's rules are anything that you are spending, there's a 20% amount that you have to spend on ADA upgrades. So you spend 100 grand, 20,000 of that has to be for ADA upgrades. And we can say, yeah, we're upgrading the bathroom. We're making it ADA compliant now, you know, whatever that is. So it's a great way to go. We do that for a handful of clients each year. But those are my kind of pitfalls that I've seen is, you know, if you're going to buy a practice and move into it, try to do the remodel now if you can afford it, because it's shutting down in the future is hard.
Good advice. Now, there's an elephant in the room and they're called tariffs. Now, I don't know, you're in this every day. You're bidding jobs every day. You're talking to subs every day. You're looking at building costs every day. And again, we do not get into, you and I talked about this before we push the record button. We don't get into politics, but the reality is there are tariffs that have come into play since the beginning of the year. Have they hit the dental space as far as construction, or are you still good?
Not necessarily yet. We had a little blip, but it seems like they keep getting pushed back. And so I don't, you know, as for the timing or when they're going to kick in. So we haven't seen it yet. I have had it happen outside of dental for a large commercial franchise company that we do build outs for. And they requested that we buy the lighting package from their vendor right away, because as of X date, it was going to increase however much because of the tariff. So that was a one situation I've seen that so far, but otherwise we have not seen tariffs actually start to affect us yet. There's been a lot of threats of, hey, by this date, we may be increasing, but we haven't seen it. It's mostly price increases, right? So we haven't seen it necessarily increase just yet, although, you know, we don't know what the future holds.
So sooner rather than later might be the advice. A couple other things. Let's talk about cities and counties and how they make your life miserable. Doctor wants to build, I'll pull it down. You said Pleasanton, Walnut Creek, whatever it is up there. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do these cities and counties, do they operate differently? Are they easy? Are they hard? Do you lose sleep at night over? How do you deal with them?
So great question. They all some operate exactly the same. Most of them, they're different city to city. You know, Oakland recently, we're doing a job there, and they didn't do any of the mechanical, electric, and plumbing plan check in the city, which I've never seen happen before. They said, no, just turn it, you know, bring them to the field, and the inspector is going to do the plan check in the field. And I said, I've never seen that happen before. Do they need to be stamped? He said, no. I said, I've done jobs in Oakland. You didn't do this last time. He said, oh, I don't know. We've been doing this for 20 years. I said, well, you didn't do this last time. So everybody's a little bit different. Some cities, most cities, you do your plans, you do your MEP engineering to go with the plans. Your dental equipment plan goes with the plans. You submit for the permit. Everybody's different on timing. San Jose seems to take for some ungodly amounts of time to review plans and get them back to us. But I've also had some cities that, you know, are done in 15 days and you get a permit. So it depends on the city and how long the review process is. But the general idea is you submit, you wait your time for the review. They send out comments. The architect handles those comments. He resubmits, and then you get your permit. And then once you get going, you know, they're all a little bit different in terms of inspections as well. Some have a different inspector for every single different trade: building, plumbing inspector, electric inspector, mechanical inspector. Some do it all in one. Some hire third parties. So it just depends on the city.
I think a lot of also, and because again, I got a couple more things and then we'll call it a podcast, is setting expectations. So, you know, a doctor hires you, they put their full faith and trust to build their dream office. How do you suggest that you and the dentist, and many times their spouse, interact with you? In other words, do you meet with them weekly and say, okay, today is July 10th. All right, on July 17th, we're going to go over the progress, where we're at. How do you interact with your clients on an ongoing basis?
So everybody's a little different. Some doctors, and I've found with second-gen doctors, like they have a space and they're working in it and they bought a new space or they leased a new space and they want to now do their other build-out. And maybe that's their second office that they're going to run, or they're going to move into that as their Taj Mahal forever office down, you know, whatever the case is. Some of most of those guys don't want to be involved. They're like, hey, here's the keys. Call me when it's done and I'm going to move in. I'm being facetious. They do. Right. They're more involved in that.
No, they're
But some, you know, a lot of doctors are varying degrees. Some want to have weekly conference calls, which is great. Some want to have daily calls. Some say, call me when you need a decision made or email me. The general idea is that we're heavy on the planning side, right? Especially if we're doing the design. There's a lot of conference calls, a lot of meetings, Zoom meetings, interacting. What are we going to do for flooring? What are we going to do for paint colors? Once we're under construction, I typically turn it over to my field personnel and they're interacting with the doctor on a daily basis. Hey, doctor, you know, here's some pictures or whatever. You know, I have these questions. Hey, how high did you want? Did you pick your mirror yet? Because we need to know how high to put the backing, this, you know, for whatever it is. You know, especially if we're doing lighted mirrors, have you purchased those yet? I need the instructions to know where we're going to step out for the electrical. So there's questions like that. That will come up daily from my field personnel. Once we're under construction, I usually talk to doctors maybe on a weekly basis or so. I kind of as needed. Yeah. And then again, some request, you know, hey, can we do a call every Tuesday at 10? Sure, no problem. We'll do that. And we go over the schedule. But, you know, we're pretty streamlined at this point. But once we get underway, we spit out a schedule to the team and everybody can follow along. And, you know, it's a living, breathing thing. Not all drywall is going to be completed on the exact date that we say it's going to be. The big picture is that we're done at the time that we said we were going to be done. So if I told you it's going to take 4 months, that we're done in 4 months, it's not so much, did the drywall finish on the 10th? No, it finished on the 12th. Okay. Oh my gosh, you know, let's freak out because we're going to make up those 2 days somewhere else. It's just kind of a living, breathing document.
So a little bit of advice. A little bit of advice to the doctors. Number one, and this is how I do things. You hire a professional. I'll talk about my construction process. I said to my contractor, I hired you. I vetted you. We did a contract. I trust you. All right. Once a week, let's talk. If something comes up, you're going to call me. But Mike, I think I'm going to ask my doctor, don't micromanage your contractor. Don't be calling him every hour. Oh, I thought of that. Oh, I thought of that. You're gonna end up in therapy, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so let's put a
it makes them very cumbersome, and in my opinion, it kind of slows the process down.
Exactly. So a lot of it is about you, Mike, setting the expectations of the doctor. How long is this going to take? How much is it going to cost? What are the pitfalls? And the fact is, doctors, you need to understand that in construction, things come up, right?
Yep,
that you cannot anticipate, but then the doctor can't blame you for those things.
In the early phases, right?
Sure.
Building A, going back to me helping a doctor select a space with their realtor. Building A, here's some of the pitfalls. It's really old. I have a feeling when we get into the walls, there's going to be damage that are going to make us delayed. Building B is brand new and it's brand new construction. I know there's a sewer line. I know there's this. I know there's that. This is a no-brainer. We might be less time than I'm telling you because we're just going to fly through this. So those are conversations that we can have very early in the process.
Very early. So the key, And the last thing I'm going to, the key doctors, from what I'm hearing from you, Mike, is start early, talk to the professionals, maybe go to the bank first and get the professionals, call Mike first, and he'll send you to the professionals. They all work together. It's a very small community. Mike, biggest mistakes dentists make in doing dental construction?
Boy, that's a good question.
Maybe they don't make mistakes.
Yeah, well, you know, they do. There's pitfalls for sure. You know, I think probably not following that process that you just laid out. The biggest mistakes I find are that, like we talked about earlier, you know, my brother-in-law is a realtor. He does all residential, but I'm going to have him help me find my space. And then I found the space, but I didn't include anybody that knew anything about dental in the upfront planning of it. Or I hired this architect that only does houses, but it, you know, he's going to design my dental office for me, or, you know, whatever the case is. A lot of what I've been seeing lately too, the last couple of years, a lot of doctors go and start buying equipment online. Or through these, like, like they're not a physical presence of the dealer, like a big one, like a Benko or a Patterson or a Henry Schein. And we find more, those are a little bit, there's some nuances to that. They typically won't send out a rep. You know, let me walk you through quickly what our process would be to break ground. You know, we're going to do any demolition that's required. We're going to lay out the framing, and then we're going to actually have a meeting with the architect, the doctor, and the equipment specialist and say, okay, here are the walls. Everybody good with the walls? Yep. Hey, doctor, this is where your chair is going to go. Let's figure out exactly where it's going with the equipment specialist and the architect. Okay. There's a template, a full-size template. And here is where your cabinet's going to be. Do you have enough room to get around it? Or should we pull the head wall back 6 inches and give you more room? Because some doctors like more room. We're going to go through all those details before we actually start building walls. When they don't have an equipment company that has a local field representative that can come out and do that with us, it makes the project very cumbersome. And I hesitate to say that there have been mistakes made, because they tell us one thing via email and give us a diagram, and we do it exactly as they tell us. And then they come out and someone else is installing the equipment, and they say, hey, this isn't under the chair. And we say, dude, we followed the diagram that you sent us. And they say, well, I don't know. Yeah. Hey, we're all pointing fingers. So the best thing that can happen is that that field representative comes out, we lay the template down, we mark it out, we paint it on the floor. Then we know where we have to break concrete and bring electrical, air, vac, whatever to the chair. I'm using a chair as an example. It's all the equipment, but where are we putting that exactly? Because we have to hit that window. And when you're dealing with somebody that's back in Florida that doesn't have somebody that can come out, and they just kind of shoot us off an email, it gets very cumbersome. And that's where I've seen some mistakes made.
Doctors, you just got about a 50-minute absolute roadmap of how to do construction of a dental office. This has been amazing. The bottom line is use dental specialists. And I don't care if we're talking about contractor, interior design, architecture, CPA, attorney, bank. The people that know what they're doing, and you're going to get the best result. Mike, give out your contact information one more time, please.
You got it. It's Mike Panisi. Renovo Group is the company. My number is 925-858-6011. Email address is Mike, M-I-K-E, at renovogroup.com, RINOVO group.com. And that's our website as well.
Fantastic. Hang with me as I take the podcast out. Mike, thank you so much for your expertise. I mean, I learned a bunch of stuff from this today, and I've been doing this 41 years, but I don't live in the world that you do. Remember, I'm the one that can't change the light bulb. That's anyway, right. Hang with me for a second. And doctors, again, thank you for the honor and the privilege of your time. I love doing this. I love teaching. I love sharing information and giving great information to my listeners. Don't forget to go to our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 continuing education courses on the best clinical you can find and great clinical content in their magazine. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. Make sure, contact me. If you're looking for a dental CPA, we're your people. We can get this done for you and save you money, take care of things. We know what's going on with this new tax law. We're going to be doing a podcast on the new tax law, which is probably going to come out before you hear Mike. So please continue to listen to the podcast. And for updates, we've got our Business of Dentistry webinar series, September 17th and November 12th, which is November 12th's year-end tax planning. Please call me 657-279-3243 or A. Wiederman. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at Ide Bailey. That's E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Mike, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And I know our listeners are going to get a lot out of listening to this podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And with that, folks, I want to thank you again for listening. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And that is it for this edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman at idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.